But as you know, we've discussed this a lot. Everybody is wondering what's going to happen with Shea Weber. So what we decided to do tonight, take a little different approach. We wanted to get some outside perspective. It certainly won't be the last that we get before this is that comes to a head at the end of the month. But Robert Volman is with Hockey Prospectus. And yes, there is a Hockey Prospectus. You guys hear me all the time talking about football outsiders and baseball prospectus.
You should be on the payroll for this publication.
But I'm not, but I really find the analysis they do very unique. It's different, and that's why I try to bring it to the table, because a lot of times it's not as much in the mainstream, because it is a little deeper level of analysis. Robert has done a great job. I first discovered his work on the Forecheck, which is a great blogger website that we have here in town. You've heard Dirk Hoge on the show before. They published a piece that he did on the Mike Fisher trade, which I thought was really interesting. And so Robert and I have exchanged some emails over the last few months, and I'm really intrigued to hear what he has to say about this issue. But Robert, if you will, thanks for joining us, first of all, and sort of spell out Hockey Prospectus, the approach that you guys like to take when determining in its simplest form the value of each player out there.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be on the Zone. And also, I think it's great what you're doing with the Alzheimer's. That was actually Gordie Howe's favorite charity as well. So, and my column's called How and Why, so that's a little bit of a touch there. But to answer your question about evaluating contracts, generally what we do is our main overall statistic is called GVT, which is goals versus threshold, which is sort of an attempt to measure all of a player's contributions, whether they be offensive or defensive, shootout, goaltending, and put that into a single number relative to a replacement-level player in terms of goals. And then GVS is sort of the sister statistic, which takes that and factors in how much that player is being paid. And I believe that's overall how we get a general feel for where a player sits. And then after that, we maybe use more refined statistics to be more precise.
Well, because I think what we found out, Robert, especially since the lockout and since the salary cap has been put in there, if you have too many players that aren't performing at the level of their contract, your team is inevitably going to be in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely, and that was actually the crux of, I guess, the Mike Fisher controversy, which is the article that Dirk Hoge took exception with on the Forecheck, which I agree is a fantastic site. Because I was saying, basically, Mike Fisher is a great player. I don't think anyone anywhere has disputed that. But just the money that Mike Fisher has paid, those are the dollars that could potentially have been used, perhaps, to keep a Shea Weber, to keep a Ryan Suter, or to go and upgrade another position. So you have to be very conscious of the dollars. So even if a guy is a great player, is a great addition, how many dollars is he costing you?
Well, and so that's... the challenges that David Poile and the staff have going forward here, because as everybody knows here, the Predators, because they need the revenue-sharing dollars, they're going to stay right at the midpoint of the salary cap. That tends to be their budget. Now, maybe that is going to change someday if they continue to improve with their overall revenue-generating base. But for now, they've got to try to sign Weber, Suter, and Ray, the three best players over the next couple of years, and still have enough resources to field a roster that hopefully will give him a chance to win a championship. So, Robert, let's start with Shea Weber and just get your sense, based on your rating system, of where he falls. Do you think he will set the market when it comes to defensemen?
It's a great question. I did some quick analysis recently, and there's not a lot of comparables for Shea Weber, because he's the type of guy that dominates offensively, dominates defensively. You can use him on the power play, the penalty kill. He does everything effectively. But I did find four players with contracts that are very similar to Shea Weber in all those respects, and that's Brent Seabrook, Dan Boyle, Zdeno Chara, and Duncan Keith. Those are the four contracts I see that are sort of setting the bar, I think, for what Shea Weber's starting point is going to be. The average of those four contracts is about $6.2 million per year. Those contracts, 5 or 6 years in every case except Duncan Keith. And I think the closest match would actually be Zdeno Chara, who's got 6 years, 41.5. Of course, I'm talking the cap hit of $6.9 million a year. That's my gut reaction as to what Shea Weber might be worth in the open market, and therefore what Nashville's going to have to do to keep him.
So we know that now, unless they can get some sort of discount, and perhaps that could be the case if you juggle with the years or things like that. How have you found it? I mean, presuming, and well, let's go step by step here, Robert. What about Ryan Suter? Where does he rate in comparison to Shea Weber? Do you think he's comparable, or is he a notch below based on how you evaluate a player?
Well, that's a good question, and it's hard to separate the two because they play together. Sometimes it's hard to tell statistically exactly, you know, who's carrying who and to what extent. I would consider them like roughly comparable. You're not comparing apples and oranges when you talk about the two, but I would say Shea Weber, consistently over the last few years, he got more points every year if you're looking at just box score statistics, but he scores at a higher rate at even strength. He scores at a higher rate on the power play, except for last year. Actually, they're fairly comparable on the power play. They both kill penalties. They do so with roughly the same effectiveness. In terms of GVT, which of course is that measurement I measured earlier, Weber is always better offensively and fairly close defensively. So I don't know. I would say Suter. Of course, Suter's roughly the same age as well. He's only about 8 months older, I think. I would say that Suter is a step back, especially since, you know, in the last 3 years, Suter scores 15 goals. Shea Weber scored 16 just last year, and that was his worst year, actually, in the last 3 years. So I'd have to say that Ryan Suter is a step back from Weber, but you are comparing apples to apples, so they're not completely different beasts.
And then finally, your philosophy, Robert, on goalies, because Pekka is, of course, nominated for the Vezina Trophy. I felt like this past year he was spectacular in covering up for some of the mistakes that the team made. But sometimes it's tricky as to how much money you're going to invest in a goalie long term. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm a big fan of Pekka Rinne. I think it can take several years to tell actually how good a goalie is. I mean, I'm sure you can think of goalies just off the top of your head that had a couple hot years and then the rest of their career they weren't that good, or had a couple of slow years and actually turned out to be dominant goalies. So I'm going to wait another year or two before I really say conclusively that Pekka Rinne is really awesome. But he certainly has been awesome so far. If you look at even strength save percentage over the last few years, he's right at the top of the league with Jonas Hiller, Thomas Vokou, and Roberto Luongo, Tim Thomas. So I really am a big fan of Pekka Rinne. And if you have a great goalie, look at the Stanley Cup Finals right now. You got Roberto Luongo against Tim Thomas, two of the best and highly paid goalies in the league. And you got teams like the Flyers who are getting knocked out for no other reason than they don't have anyone in nets. So, you know, I'm inclined to think that Pekka Rinne, especially if I saw just one more year out of him playing at this level, I'd say, yes, he's the type of guy you want to lock down long-term. And you don't want to break your bank, of course, but I think you can definitely open your wallet for Pekka Rinne.
Robert Volman from Hockey Prospectus, our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. And Robert, something that we talk about, we'd all love for the Predators to be able to keep all three of these players, Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, Pekka Rinne, and still fill the team they have now, but that's probably not going to be an option. So here's the tough question. With all the statistical studies you've done, if you had to keep two of the three players that we've talked about so far tonight, which two would you keep?
That's a tough question, and you're right. Ideally, you'd want to pick all three. Ideally, you'd want to take a look at maybe save some dollars. I mean, the Predators have five forwards, Erat, Legwant, Fisher, Dumont, and Sullivan, all of whom who have contracts expiring 1 year after the next over the next 5 years. Each one's getting paid $4 million or more. Well, Sullivan's just shy of that. Ideally, I'd carve off some of that forward dollars and put that into keeping Weber and Suter and Rinne. But that's not the question you asked me, so I'm not going to duck it. I would keep Rinne for sure, and after that, if Weber's going to sign a reasonable contract, I'd rather have him than Suter.
Robert, another question I want to ask you. I don't know if your publication does a lot of studies on teams and how well they're doing against their cap figure, but I'd be interested to know, how do the Predators fare against the rest of the league as far as bang for their buck with the salaries they're paying and the productivity they're getting from their players?
Well, that's a great question. I don't have a study to quote off the top of my head on that, but as you said earlier, the Nashville's got a bit of a disadvantage in the sense that they're not a cap team. They don't spend up to the cap, like, say, for instance, the Red Wings do. And therefore, they're playing with fewer dollars than everyone else. And yet, they had a very strong season, and they've got a very strong team. And that's even with the fact that I think they've overpaid those forwards I mentioned. So I think they've actually been very efficient with their dollars. They got good bang for the buck, but they can be doing better. And that was the point I was making with Mike Fisher. They can do a little bit better, and especially you rely on that youth. And they've done a good job drafting recently. They've got some good young players in the system. They've got some value players, like if they can re-sign Marcel Gauck. I don't know if I said his name right, Gotch. Can re-sign him at a decent rate. And they got a lot of good rookies in the system they can bring up, like Ryan Ellis down the line. So I think the key to the Thrashers is going to be getting those young players in and just being a little bit more careful with those veteran dollars.
Robert Bowman with us from Hockey Prospectus. And Robert, I was looking, there was a time this year where the San Jose Sharks were struggling. And, of course, they rebounded and they finished the year very, very strong before running into that machine up in Vancouver, as the Predators did. But they have a lot of money tied in to Joe Thornton, Danny Heatley, and Patrick Marleau. And, of course, they're all forwards, unlike the Predators, where we're talking about two defensemen and a goalie. But when you have so much money tied into three players, and I think it would be more pronounced with the Predators because, as you mentioned, they have a little less money to spend overall. Is that an efficient way to build a hockey team? I'm sure these are things that David Poile has to think about. If, let's say, the three players cost you in the neighborhood of $20 million, and obviously everybody's hoping that they can get them at a little less than that as a trio, but can you have enough to make it work and have enough depth to win?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. That's the very question that GMs across the league have to figure out. If you look at the Cup right now, the Cup Finals right now, you look at Vancouver, they have a bit more money to play with, but they've plunked a lot of money into the Sedins, Kessler, and Luongo, and that's just four players, and yet they still have all those depth players, you know, like Burrows and Mason Raymond and those guys, Manny Malhotra. They also did something interesting on defense, whereas instead of having those high-priced marquee players, you know, the Prongers, the Lidstroms, and so on, instead they've spread out their dollars very evenly among their six defensemen. So that's one way to go. And then even if you look at other teams, I mean, they're not the only ones to do that. San Jose, as you mentioned, is another team, and they've been successful with that model. So I guess what I'm saying is, any model, any approach, I think, can be successful if it's properly executed. But the challenge is to use the remaining dollars as effectively as possible. If you are going to lock down Rene, Weber, and Suter with the big money, that can work as long as you're really careful with the other dollars.
So, Robert, as we wrap this thing up, you think, now of course, nobody knows what will happen in negotiations, but you would say that, according to your rating system, Shea Weber is comparable to the highest-paid defenseman in hockey, correct?
Well, yes and no. Those are just the contracts. In terms of actual dollars, really, if Weber wants to break even, as good as he is, our statistics say $5 million is the most you would pay for a player like that. But you can't get a player like that for $5 million, but that's what that player is worth. Seems kind of unfair, but what we're really arguing is that if you took the same money that you're paying on, they're paying for Weber, and instead of getting Weber, you were to upgrade all your other positions. You maybe pick up a couple of role players, upgrade a couple of other players, and it would total the same, let's say, $6.9 million. You'd actually have a better team overall. Now, whether that's true or not, people can debate, but that sort of what we're arguing is Shea Weber's worth $5 million, but he's probably going to get paid $6.9.
Interesting stuff. Robert, great stuff. We appreciate the analysis. We'll do this again sometime, and we'll all be curious to see how this plays out over the next 25, 26 days.
Absolutely. Thanks thanks for having me on. Big fan of the Zone. And that's hockeyprospectus.com. If anyone wants to send me more questions, my email's right there.